Welcome to Live's a Pitch, the podcast where we pitch the best films that'll never get made. I'm Matt Turner.
And I'm Tom McGrath. And the game goes like this. We ask you, our devoted listeners, to come up with titles that you'd like to hear us pitch.
We then collaborate, coming up with story points, casting, and even marketing strategies.
Without further ado, this week's title is... Internet Famous.
Okay.
Internet Famous, the musical.
That's from Eileen. That's Eileen Monty. It's short for Eileen, but I believe she says it Eileen.
Hello, Eileen. Thank you for your title we're using. She's a very nice, talented person. High five.
Well, thank you for that title, and thank you to everyone tuning in to hear Dave Bulmer and Brent Black, a.k.a. Brental Floss, also a.k.a. Demon Tomato Dave, but switch those round, not respectfully. Anyway, for our musical episode, we've got two pretty much musical experts on the show. You are the eminent scholars of musicals in the world, as everyone knows. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hello.
I'm glad that I found time in my scholarship to carve out an hour or two to stop scholaring in that particular practice. Yeah.
Well, at least you've got some scholarship. I'm being called an expert, and basically what it is that I've seen about four musicals.
Oh, you're
more than me.
You've seen them a lot, Dave.
I have seen them a lot.
I have a similar strength in that, yeah, basically I watched Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat like 12 times and was just like, really love this, and learned everything about it and then moved on to the next one.
Did you still do all the colours?
No, I never could.
I can. Any day you like. Red, yellow and green and brown and scarlet and black and ochre and pink and ruby and olive and violet and fawn and lilac and golden and chocolate and mauve and cream and crimson and silver and rose and azure and lemon and rust and grey and cream and... Oh, no, I've lost it.
And blue.
Red and yellow and green and brown and scarlet and black and ochre and peach and ruby and olive and violet and fawn and lilac and gold and chocolate and mauve and cream and crimson and silver and rose and azure and lemon and rust and grey and purple and white and pink and orange and blue. I think that's... Is that all of them, Abby?
And blue.
And blue.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So we're bringing back the dangerous format of movie musicals for this week.
Improvised movie musicals.
This can only go well. But as usual, we are going to do honourable mentions first, which you have sent to us via Twitter at Life's a Pitch Show, Facebook.com/Life's a Pitch Podcast, and sometimes even Instagram at Life's a Pitch Show.
So, yeah, we've got some honourable mentions this week. From Phil Walters, we've got Character Limit 140.
Ah!
The Twitter musical.
That is an interesting gimmick for a musical, isn't it? I feel like that could be done.
A very Twitter musical.
Every time a really good song moment gets going, it can only be the length of one tweet, you know?
Oh, wow! So it's like the WarioWare of musicals. Like, it's always cutting to different musicals every 140 characters.
Right. Like, the big emotional moment, you know, like, the spotlight changes, and it's like, I never thought this would happen to me. Who could have known I... Like, that's the end of that.
As they go along... Like, the cast start realizing, not like, you know, the cast of characters start realizing that they're getting cut off. So they start getting better at condensing their thoughts into 140 characters. And as in the background, like, you know, you ever seen Sherlock where the writing comes up in the middle of the screen, overlaid over everyone in the background?
Yeah.
So that comes up, you know, like a tweet, you know, as they're typing, as they're singing, it types over the front, and you can see a little counter of the amount of characters used. They start getting more economic with them, but also the intros start getting longer. So you have a really like a 30 to 45 second musical intro, and then they come out and do 140 characters still.
I've got an idea, right? So that's happening, and it's all these different characters in completely different places and different ways of life. But their stories start to converge. We start to realize they're kind of around each other. When, about halfway through the musical, the film, they meet up, then things start to get a bit, the repercussions of talking in 140 characters start to come up. So like every other song is a criticism of the song before it and how the thing they said wasn't very nuanced. And it's like, yes, I know we've only got 140 characters to sing in. And then a big fight breaks out and fascism takes over the world.
I'm trying to think, like, it would be sort of your latest tweet could have been a little bit better, and your lyrics are cheesier than cheddar. But then, like, that's the
cheese
end of
rhyme.
Hashtag cheese rhyme, and that's the end of the thing. Next guy is just like, really, really cheese puns, and then that's another music. It's like it's a spiral. It's a spiral of subtweets.
Oh, and you know what you could do? You could have it that it gets to the point where, like, it, instead of it being 140 characters per song, that's how long you've got for your line in what is increasingly one big song that's going on and on. But you know how sometimes in any musical, someone will say something and the chorus will repeat it. Well, we could have something where someone sings something and then the chorus all say, I'm screaming, and then they repeat what they just said.
The final moment of the thing, like the character that really has had trouble expressing themselves all along figures out how to do a thread.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And finally, after the audience has gotten used to this very condensed, constant blue balls, constant, never quite fulfilling an idea, the thread just like releases all of that.
Yeah.
There's an actual song.
Meanwhile, as they're trying to make their long nuanced point, every couple of 140 characters, someone comes in and criticizes something they were about to say in the next one. You know,
I'm feeling like they've all met in a park or something. They've you know, they find out they're near each other,
yeah.
and at this point, you start off with these people around their phones in their own lives or around their, you know, around the world, and then as they get closer and closer, they meet each other in the park, and then the pretense of them being on phones falls away and they're just singing tweets at each other. And then the entire finale is under a kind of drone, a kind of round of convefe, 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 convefe. Because as the fascism grows around them to take over the world, there's an ongoing drone of like the static of media.
So the film is set on a background of sort of like an up-and-coming fascist dictator taking over this country while these characters sort of communicate about it over Twitter.
Yes.
And, of course, you've got the lovable anti-fascist looter who's kind of a misunderstood Aladdin character, like, hashtag riffraff, hashtag loot that, if only they read hashtags.
No, maybe? I don't know. Something like that.
I punched a man and stole his bags.
Yes. Yes. Antifa Aladdin.
Antifa Aladdin.
So who's playing this young Twitter rap scallion?
I think Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Yeah,
gotta be.
I mean, you do run dry when you're sort of like movie, musical, star, Hollywood stars who can sing, and I don't mean like Russell Crowe sing, I mean like actually sing.
Yeah. This is Life's a Pitch, Matt. Everyone can sing. Should we move on to the next one?
Shall we?
We've got one from Joni Breen, and that is The Hotel Built on Wheels.
Oh, that's lovely.
I'm thinking like a Rocky Horror bit.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like,
I want this to be, maybe there could be a Rocky Horror themed bit of the hotel. I want this to be an all singing, all dancing, rolling hotel. You know, I want people, I want people poking out the windows and doing lines. I want there to be, you know, spiral staircases that go a bit outside and stuff's going on there, like a kind of a, like a big showboat, but it's a hotel.
I didn't mean Rocky Horror, just to clarify. I didn't mean Rocky Horror as in it should have Tim Curry dressed, you know, transvestite and all that stuff.
But Tim Curry should own the hotel.
Yes, he should.
Yes, yeah. Given.
But what I meant was, it's somewhere like a place, a mysterious place that people from another kind of culture enter yeah. and are surprised to find yeah. it's all singing, all dancing, and but on
it,
wheels.
It should just roll through the town slowly yes. doing songs.
Sorry, Brent, what were you going to say?
I just feel like the opening number, in all seriousness, should be called Where We're Going. Like,
yeah.
You meet all the characters, and in their individual lives, they don't know where they're going. But when you are... when you work for a hotel that is actually mobile, that is on wheels, you really don't know where you're going. Maybe that's part of the whole deal is...
It's you know, perfect. Like, this hotel turns up. It's turns up to people who have lost their way.
Yeah.
It's like a traveling... Whoa. It's almost like a traveling show that sort of, when people don't know where they're going, it gives them a direction.
Wow, this is a good idea.
Yeah, okay. So Tim Curry owns the hotel. Is there a hotel driver who has...
I think the hotel drives itself, but
I think it runs on song power.
Yeah. So there's a hotel barbershop quartet, and if they keep singing, then the hotel keeps running.
Yeah.
In fact, you know what? There's a whole bit where essentially someone comes in and I don't know what they, because they're going to shake up the runnings of this, the hotel on wheels, right? Because something, it can't just be status quo all the time. So right.
No, other bands get to contribute music to this as well.
Yes. At some point they're going to go into what's the engine room that's always been there and nobody's allowed in. And they find out that while everyone else sleeps, it normally runs on the songs that they're using. But while everyone else sleeps, there's a sad barbershop quartet chained up in the engine room, providing like auxiliary power to make it go.
Doing sad songs.
Yeah.
Well, I feel as if there would be, this is something where people could drop in and out of the quartet, you know, as long as there's four people standing around the engine,
okay,
you know,
yeah.
almost like hands on it, like the orb.
Are there some consequences that we're not initially aware of for if it stops? Is there an element of speed?
Yeah, I was wondering if there was.
Like, well, actually, there's a curse that makes the hotel...
It's a health and safety nightmare, really. Like, having a business that just goes around with people sleeping, like, it's...
Well, how about this? Right. This hotel picks up people who are sad, right? That have lost their way in life.
Yeah.
The person, our sort of, not opening number, but introduction to our main character should be a blues number. Something that sort of, they are lamenting the sadness in their life. And the reason the hotel picks these people up is they're drawn to the source of power. It's emotion of the songs. It's the emotion of the songs that drives the hotel.
Right.
Meaning that they keep picking up sad people because to keep going. And then the shakeup is going to be by the end of the film that she's decided to have Tim Curry change his ways and to provide such a nice place that it can run on joy.
Okay.
Wow. So the hotel originally runs on sadness, and then by the end of the film, it runs on joy songs. So it goes around finding people that are happy and taking them away from the places they were happy.
I guess the big arc for Tim Curry would be that he is sad because nothing for him ever changes. He's not happy in this hotel.
Right.
He just is. He's like the genie who's trapped in this thing. Like he is the driver. You know, he is the kind of maitre d' who's always, he's dressed like he is in Home Alone 2.
welcome, Mr. McAllister.
Oh, wait a minute. He should be the conductor in the bus and music sense.
Yes. Very good. And he's not happy in there. He's like, my life has, you know, very little meaning. I'm not, this isn't a home for me. This is, feels like a job. And by the end, our main character, played by, I don't know, Emma Stone, has changed the hotel so much that he can be happy in his own home. And it's like a family rather than a transient group of sad people.
Is it possible that in the mix of all this, that one character is in fact an undercover health inspector?
Yes.
And the mystery is just where all the toilet pipes go.
yes.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't work like a train.
By the end, ends up being the most joyful of all the characters, but had to go, you know, through quite a bit to get there.
That is
Jeremy
100%...
Irons, the health inspector.
I was going to say Steve Martin, but, you know...
No, Jeremy Irons. Jeremy Irons is that kind of health inspector, sort of like the Buzzkill. Mr. Buzzkill is his name. That's...
Maybe that's it. Maybe that.
Buzzkill, the health inspector.
Maybe the part of the plot is that the it's going to get taken off its wheels. This hotel is going to get taken off its wheels, and so it won't be able to go around picking up new sad people. They need to find a way to keep the hotel alive.
Sorry, with its... what do you mean taken off its wheels?
Well, the health inspector's coming, and he's gonna take it off the road.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant just like lift it off its wheels and put it down somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the idea of a scene where it gets the initial pull over from the health inspector, who's also somehow got cop powers. Like the health inspector van, which like the sirens go off, and the hotel's like, you know, they've got the megaphone, like, please pull over, sir or madam, please pull over. And they're like, you're driving a hotel, but you roll down this little window. Can I help you, officer? Are you okay? I am pulling you over because you appear to be a hotel. And this raises some questions. I happen to be a health inspector. I was on the way to a food truck, but I think this is more pressing, actually.
You've solved the main riddle. That's where the toilet pipes go. Every now and then, the hotel lays a little ramp comes out, and just a little burger van slides out and parks at the side of the road. And then that's I guess. Like, I'm not trying to disparage the food in the burger vans necessarily, although God knows I've never stopped at one because I think I'd die. But presumably they dispose of their waste in some way, and that's how the hotel does it.
So this hotel goes around shitting burger vans on laybys.
And that's how you know where it's been.
I'm also loving the image of like a scene where Tim Curry puts on his country western outfit, starts playing the banjo while also being chased by like a thousand police cars down the highway.
Yeah.
Wow, high-speed chase of a hotel. That's
amazing. Hotel? What's the best music for a high-speed chase? Banjos.
Absolutely.
It makes perfect sense.
Bluegrass, him
and all of his... There'll be a few other guys with banjos leaning out the windows going... as they're driving down the road.
And there's someone, you'll never catch us.
There's someone they couldn't get to sing. There's someone they couldn't get to sing, and they're like, we're going to need you to get away from this, from these cops. We need the extra speed.
Willie Nelson is sat like in his chair, he's not sung the entire time. It's like, we're going to need you, Willie.
But like, Willie Nelson as Willie Nelson?
Yeah.
He's just like smoking a lot of weed in this one very foggy, smoky hotel room. They're like, Willie, buddy, we need you this time.
I think
we really need you.
I think this is the sort of film where, because of all the different rooms and because of how silly it is, I reckon you can have a Blues Brothers-style situation where different musicians are showing up doing cameos. And by the way, it's just occurred to me, Steve Martin is also a banjo musician.
Yeah, that's
get
what
him in.
Yeah, they're like, where do the country western singers stay? And Tim Curry's like, looking at my list, I think it's room 5, 6, 7, 8.
That's part of a discreet and ordered list of rooms. My goodness, this is a very large, either a very large hotel or there are some very small rooms. Over 5,000 rooms.
Well,
on a traveling hotel.
I don't think it's ordered because the reggae musicians stay in 1, 2. So it's.
Oh, I see. So, like, there's a room 1E and a 2E.
Yeah. So I don't think that it's necessarily logical. It's only based around the puns.
Yeah, and the jazz band is taking up rooms 1, 2, 3, and 4.
I'm in and a 2. I'm in room and a 2.
By the way, this is almost a serious point, I think. This film's poster would have to be done by someone who did like 60s comedies. You know the sort I mean, where everyone is like an exaggerated caricature in a cartoony drawing.
Like a giant head
leaning out of windows. Like the hotel gets bigger the further up it gets, and there's little arms and legs and clouds of fight coming out of some of them.
But I also kind of want it to be Howl's Moving Castle style Ghibli animation. Oh, service. Yeah.
That's too slow. This needs to be wackier than that. This needs to have a kind of Carry On vibe.
You're damn right.
Genuinely a good... I would be happy if they made that film. Let's make this film.
It's a good film. This movie like feels very much like one of those, like when you sleep after having had, like, you took a melatonin because you were jet lagged, or like, you know, you had a few drinks, or one of those things where like your dreams are more vivid than usual. Maybe your feet were elevated, but like this feels like one where you wake up and you go, okay, none of this makes any sense, but here's what I dreamed, and it's pretty cool, and it felt at the time like it was pretty interesting.
It's
like
the movie Labyrinth.
If you don't write it down.
Like Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to read a few out that we didn't get to. From Charlie Gascoigne, we've got Phantom of the Opera, which I already looked up on Google image search is a thing people have done.
I'm sure it is a thing, yeah.
From Jeff Beard, we had Pia No Way Out.
As in piano? Piano Way Out?
Piano Way Out.
Okay, right, yes.
Okay.
From Zaldero, we've got My Notebook. Note. Note. From at Hugh What Where, we've got Obama Mia.
Oh,
that would be great. That would be really great.
Maybe Trump fathered Obama out of wedlock at the age of 15. And it's like they're all at a Greek hotel together and Obama realizes Trump is his dad.
Oh, you have no idea how hard I want that to turn out to be the case.
No wonder he was so obsessed about his birth certificate.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole time, and he suspected, and that was his undercover way of finding out.
Obama's second act power ballad entitled No, No, God, No, Fuck, No, God, No.
I want to know where this guy is from and who his daddy is
and what he does as well.
So yeah, thank you for all your suggestions. Sorry I didn't have time to get around to all of them. If you want to give us titles any time of the week, not based on a genre, although we do ask for a genre on Friday on our social media, you can find us on facebook.com/ Life's a Pitch podcast and on Twitter at Life's a Pitch show as well.
And let's not forget that this show is brought to you by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/ Life's a Pitch podcast. Over there, you can get a load of extra stuff. But for all the stuff that we've been doing for the past 2 years, you can find us at soundcloud.com/ Life's a Pitch podcast, and just on iTunes and all the other places you get podcasts, apart from Spotify, because fuck Spotify, frankly. Go find us, go give us good reviews, and enjoy all the stuff we've done for a while.
So on with today's main musical pitch, which is from Eileen Monty, Internet Famous.
Internet Famous, right. I mean, you guys have got a better chance at having context for this one than we do.
I think it's... What comes to mind is... A child now who, instead of wanting to be a movie star or an opera singer or a politician, wants one thing, and that is to be a really big star on the really small screen. I think that's probably the opening number. And, you know, like, he'll do anything. This is his, like, life goal, but he doesn't really know how to get started. Maybe he doesn't know the underside, the dark underbelly of this.
Well, let's first decide, A, who's going to play this kid who wants to become internet famous.
Tom Holland.
Tom Holland, okay. Yeah. And B, what's the genre of a really big star on a really small screen?
Oh, Dave, you want to... Sorry, I saw you, Dave, having a thought, I think.
It wasn't a thought. It was a burp.
um I mean, to me, the genre would just be probably Disney Renaissance. You know, I was like just probably in the neighborhood of Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Little Mermaid.
All right.
Or maybe even later, like I Just Can't Wait to Be King. You know, it doesn't just have to be Alan Menken. It could be a little bit of an Elton John feel, but it's, you know, movie musical that felt classic in the 90s.
because you see, for me, this is just my, you know, straight pushback on what when you said really big star on a really small screen, I thought that's a really good country and western title. Because I was like, because I'm a really big star on a really small screen, and then but again, but
can that be the opening salvo of a movie musical?
That's why I'm conceding. I think Brent, you've got it on that one, because that would be great. But you can't start unless they're from like the Deep South and they are heading to somewhere with an internet connection. It's not something that you can open a world with, is it?
Wait, I'm going to stop you there, right? The Deep South, right, I'm pretty sure the Deep South has the internet now.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You're entirely sure?
It's like going from the Deep South to somewhere with an actual internet connection.
You've got to be pretty deep to avoid any kind of internet in that South.
Well, we really want to ram it home that this person doesn't know about the dark side of internet fame, so they've got to have heard about the
internet. Wait a minute, hang on. This is, I do like the idea that this is the seed for, the concept that this kid has not experienced the internet, but has heard of it and has imagined what it must be like.
It's like Oliver Twist and Streets Paved with Gold. It's, you know, it's like going to the big city, but it's going to the big internet.
Well, no, yeah. This kid, right, is known for being very theatrical. He knows the stagecraft and stuff like that.
And now, in the Deep South, that's grounds for getting killed.
Exactly.
Maybe it's like I'm tempted to say Amish, but maybe something a bit like that. Some kind of a religious group where they do a lot of, you know, passion plays and stuff. So they know
Mennonite hillbillies.
Okay, then.
Like, they're not quite Amish. They can ride. It's okay for them to go to 7-Eleven and, you know, buy a coffee. It's okay for them to take a Greyhound bus, but they're still quite strict. And if they're hillbillies, they're also, like, you know, living off the land. Maybe they're homeschooled. In that kind of, like, we say we're homeschooled, but really we're just milking things and cows, I mean.
Milking things.
And he is great at performing, like, on stage and stuff like that. And then one day when they're out grabbing supplies that they can't make themselves in Amish or hillbilly territory, he sees someone on their phone watching a YouTube video, and he's like, oh, my God. What is that on that really small screen? And the guy's like, well, this man on the YouTubes, he just does movie reviews, and he's got really, really famous for saying bad things about good movies. That people like him for it, though. I like him as well. He is very humorous. That could be describing many people on the internet, really.
And not so in that logic, like, couldn't.
Oh my Lord, I've got to get on that very small screen. I once was a boy from Amish County. Gonna find my way inside the town.
The county is what you're thinking of. County being an Amish word for phone. Townty.
Townty, yeah. I've got to find my way inside this townty. And so it's a whole thing about him realizing what this thing is. And he's like, I'm going to be a star on a very small screen. Boom. First act done.
And then, but okay.
That's the first act then, done.
Yeah.
No. Then, on this supply trip, he finishes that number.
Yeah.
And then everyone is looking at him. In this, like, wherever they are, in this
supermarket.
With
their phones out.
At Walmart. Everyone's looking at him. Yes, with some of them with their phones out, but his dad is also looking at him with like doing the fist punch thing. And he's got his
belt out already. Like, yeah, and I think that it keeps cutting back to his dad through that song, just sort of getting his belt out.
So he is dragged home by his dad, but unbeknownst to them, he is now internet famous because of that video that everyone took on their phones.
Yes, yeah. And I think maybe at that point he's kind of outcast from that society because they now know he's theatrical.
Yeah.
And so what that means is that like his mum says, You're gonna have to get out. They're planning to beat you up or something because you're theatrical.
I can see your uncle and your pa sharpening their pitchforks and torches. They're coming for you, boy. Get on the bus to Hollywood.
Dad, sit him down and say, like, have a song like, "My father was a hillbilly of vague occupation, and his father was a hillbilly of vague occupation, and his father was a hillbilly of vague occupation, and that's why you're going to be a hillbilly of vague occupation." Like, that's the family business, is like weirdly somehow making money, probably living off the land, maybe selling random things, like a car in disrepair in the front yard. But, like, that's what this family does, and he'll be damned if his son is going to be internet famous for singing in a Walmart about his plans to be internet famous.
"My father was a hillbilly, a vague occupation. I ain't never left the county, son. I ain't even seen the station."
I like that.
Yeah. So
your recent video performance is no cause for celebration.
I think we're giving his vocabulary too much credit, actually.
Yeah.
That's true. It's true. Well, they have one book in the house. It's a dictionary in the toilet. In the bathroom, they've got a dictionary. So occasionally he picks something up.
Yeah. So his mum, played by Helen Mirren. His dad, played by Josh Brolin. Helen Mirren tells him to go to Hollywood to seek out this new internet fame and make something of himself.
But Helen Mirren has to have as unconvincing an English accent as the hillbilly accents you guys have done so far. Yeah. She's like, "Oh, hello. I'm Helen Mirren. I'm your mother. You should follow your dreams. I'm definitely English. Hello." I'm sorry.
There's definitely a scene where he's explaining where he came from to someone he's met in Hollywood, and he's like, "We only had one dictionary because my dad thought it was a Bible. I had to change the covers because otherwise he was liable to set it on fire."
It's this just like the good book says, a noun.
Genesis 1:1 says aardvark.
In the beginning, there was aardvark.
Okay, so does he decide to go to Hollywood?
Yeah, he's gone to Hollywood and
yes,
sort of finds. Now we're into
a vague sense of how to be famous. You've got to go to Hollywood.
Yes,
but he's already famous. As he takes every step on his journey to try and be famous, he is currently famous and doesn't know.
And so, yeah, he goes to like the classical sense of trying to be famous.
Yeah.
In that he goes to try to get headshots and a casting agency and movie producers, and he's like going to casting calls and things. He's like really trying.
But the thing is, though, he would get an agent because he's currently famous. So the agent's like, "Yeah, you need representation." But he reckons that he got it by applying and doing the thing you're supposed to do to get to Hollywood.
So is this sort of like a William Hung story where he will get booked on shows because he's famous for this thing, but he doesn't realize yet that everybody's laughing at him and that it's not that he was a good performer? Like, is this part of the deal of realizing,
like an Andy Kaufman character?
Or the opposite, where like he wants to do what he considers legitimate performance, whatever that is. But he's getting booked only to recreate his Walmart performance. And in a montage of everybody trying to get a piece of him and everybody trying to book him while he's hot, but he's hot for people laughing at him.
Well, yeah, I think
overcome that somehow.
I think definitely there's a part of... I'd like to string out the part where he's not famous for a little while, like in a Forrest Gump way. Mm. So, like, he's... it's kind of just Forrest Gump, isn't it? But, like, he sort of... he gets to an agent who's never heard of the internet. They're an old-style Hollywood agent. And they're like, I don't know what we're going to do with you, boy. Not realizing that they've got, like, a massive internet hit on their hands.
That's good.
And then as it slowly unfolds, he's, like, signed up with this agent and they're trying to get him, like, gigs in the traditional means.
Yeah.
And the agent cannot understand why he keeps getting booked.
Yeah.
And you've got no business agent... cards. You've got no headshots. Your resume is not even half a page long.
The agent's got a grandkid who knows exactly who this guy is, but there's just such a communication gap between the grandchild and the agent.
The agent played
always
by...
Just scruffing him on the head and just turning him away.
The agent played by Bernie Sanders, really.
Well, I was going to say we need Bernie Sanders
I have booked you for over 1% of all of the things you've got out for. I am very proud of you. I don't understand what this, where your famousness is coming from. But I suppose, you know, my grandson, Ernie Sanders, is very famous. So I'm going to keep sending you out.
He,
99% of auditions that come in.
What would Bernie Sanders' character called Henry Fetchum?
He's called Henry Fetchum, but his grandson's called Ernie Sanders.
Yeah, because of course his grandson wouldn't necessarily. It's a maternal link, so it's his daughter's son.
Due to the idiosyncrasies of my family tree, I am Henry Fetchum and my grandson is Ernie Sanders.
he's got to have a song, right?
Yeah.
This is a music.
It goes like this. Bum, bum, bum. I don't know why you're famous. Bum, bum. There's a lot of things I don't know. Bum. Like, why is my grandson named Ernie Sanders, and why does that hotel go? That hotel on the gate. It's a throwback joke. Hey!
Yes.
And why does that hotel go? And he just points, and it's just...
With a load of banjos sticking out. It's like... No, sorry, it would actually be...
I've never heard the Doppler effect with banjo. That's amazing.
Not me either, like... but I'd like to.
Yeah. Oh my god. Oh, if ever I have too much money, that's where it's going.
See, he keeps getting booked on just to sing the same song he did, like, or just in different supermarkets. He keeps getting booked to play different supermarkets just by doing that
really
same song.
Really big star with a little tiny screen or whatever.
So what's his actual talent? Does he have one?
He can sing, I think.
He can sing and dance.
He's all singing, all dancing. But it's the fact that he didn't know he could do it so well was the reason it went viral, I guess. And then in the background... No, actually... In the background, you can also, of this video, you can also see his dad taking his belt off and getting ready to hit him. And that turns out to be the missing link. Like, to inject some emotion into this, like, his star starts to fade because they realize that the audiences start to realize, hang on, this isn't as funny unless he's being disapproved of by the people around him. So
does he maybe... kind of have a moment like a dark night of the soul. He goes back home and he doesn't want his parents to know he's there because he doesn't want them to know he failed. So he goes up into the attic to sleep and stumbles upon this box, and the box has like an accordion, and he never knew that his dad was like a famous accordion player who like gave it up after something happened, but like this is the next, you know,
he failed.
The next
he failed.
The story.
That's the thing is that this kid, he made a bit of money. I want to say like he made a bit of money from these appearances, but you know, obviously he was getting booked less and less, and to the point where he was just not getting booked anymore. Ernie Sanders says to the camera. And then he gets back, as you said, finds this accordion and kind of, you know, maybe their family was on hard times financially. He buys them, like, anonymously a new, whatever it was they were doing, indeterminate, you know.
Vague occupation, yeah.
The reason it's a vague occupation is it turns out that every generation of this family has been a famous musician who then had to hide it from their kids.
Yes.
So they all just said, I've always been a hillbilly of vague occupation.
And this is where we get back to the musical roots of the South. And, like, we start to say that he buys a new accordion for his dad because he came home after he'd played accordion on the streets of Hollywood for so long, trying to get booked, made a little bit of money on the street busking, but then his accordion broke, he couldn't afford to fix it, went home, and he was like, and his father said, "You failed to bring money back to the family." And then so little Tom Holland buys his dad a brand new accordion and says, "Listen, we're going back to Hollywood together.
We're going back to Hollywood, Pa. We're going to take the internet by storm."
I love how he's a Southern belle. Like,
Rue McClanahan from The Golden Girls is really nailing it in this odd gender-bending role. But, I mean, hey, you know, it's 2017, and she's dead, but they can do a lot of things, like, you know, like Grand Moff Tarkin style. They're doing a Grand Moff Tarkin of Rue McClanahan as the dad. And he's just a sassy Southern belle of a dad. And he plays that accordion.
We gotta get back to Hollywood and take the internet by storm.
You're starting to sound
once
like a
more.
House of Cards. yeah, what's his
Frank
name?
Underwood.
Yeah, Frank Underwood.
So do they go back out to Hollywood?
I think there's definitely a duet that is in a rainy night, and Eddie Rabbit loves a rainy night, and that's the background for that. But it's a rainy night, and it's Tom Holland coming back in through the storm with this box, and his dad and his friends are all lining up because they've seen him on the horizon coming towards them. And then Tom Holland opens the box and then starts to sing. At this moment, in this song, which is a duet between him and his dad, he managed to convince, through the power of his song and a gift of a really nice accordion, gets his dad to start getting back into the music.
So it's like, it starts as like a back and forth between him and his dad, but his dad's just sort of having none of it. And then by the end, by like halfway through the song, he starts getting more and more musical. It's kind of yeah, like Ryan Gosling in that song in La La Land. What a Waste of a Lovely Night.
He just
says his lines at the start while she's singing, and then by the end they're both singing.
"Although you look so cute in your polyester suit, it's wool." Like that sort of stuff. Yeah, he's kind of denying the song as it goes along, and then slowly he ekes his dad into doing a little bit of a harmony or whistling along or accordioning along. I'm not a musical writer, but something like that. You know?
Yeah, so, no, I hear what you're saying. You got this. So okay, at this point, is their goal to go back out to Hollywood and finally, basically their dreams merge because they both had a similar dream? It's just that, like, the son... Did we name the son?
It's just Tom Holland.
So, yeah, their dreams are now merged, but, you know, it's a highly saturated market. So maybe they have to actually... They decide on the way out from, you know, the Southeast, which is like the deep South, right?
Yeah.
On their way out to California in their hillbilly mobile, perhaps they stop in Arizona or a place where you might find an indigenous tribe that could take you on a vision quest, perhaps some ayahuasca, some peyote. And perhaps we have lots of cameos of actual internet celebrities warning them against the pitfalls of internet fame. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Perhaps maybe JonTron's there with some words of wisdom
in them.
Perhaps PewDiePie's got a couple thoughts in their vision quest, but it's all a big song, you know, about like, don't let it go to your head, keep your head on straight.
Yes, and at the end of this vision quest, they're all like, as you do when you wake up from a vision quest, you are like your clothes are tattered and you wake up in the middle of a field, and standing over them is what would you say, Ernie Sanders, the grandson of thing, and they
Henry
say
grab him.
Fetch him, I think you'll
fetch
find
him. That's the one.
And he says
grab him, son.
You know, there's a video going around of you in a gas station forecourt on the
tripping
on the,
balls.
A tripping balls and singing this amazing song.
Is Ernie Sanders just is like a higher pitched version of just like this? Like, hey, it's me, Ernie Sanders. I'm all the grandson of a.
He's also played by Bernie Sanders, but his face.
No,
it's just his face, but like CG'd onto a small boy actor.
I never believe the big budget we got for this movie. This is gonna be great.
And I'm just living the end. How they get to Hollywood and realize that being internet famous is. It's a very saturated market, and they're never going to be as famous as, like, the rock stars that his dad and him aspire to be, like, and so they end up just sat in the two O's of Hollywood singing their own little song as the camera slowly moves away to the sea. And we've got a massive shot of Los Angeles.
But what would be nice is if on the way... And this would actually be nice. This is just quite nice. Mm. On the way, as the camera pans out, it doesn't go straight upwards. It pans along the ground for a while. And as far away as it goes, like a long way away, while the sign is just a little word on the horizon, you see people watching them do that song on their phone.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking as well.
That they've tuned in live.
View counts exponentially growing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just a nice, like, everyone's, like, going, oh, that is nice. They've brought a nice southern charm to the internet. Well done.
The moral being that you can't always capture lightning in a bottle on the internet. Sometimes you have to just genuinely do what is in your heart to do artistically. But when you do that, when you are yourself, sometimes if you're lucky... You can that can be your ticket to internet fame.
Mm. Or even, you know, just doing it is good enough in itself. Is like making the art is good enough in itself. And even if only three people like it, they're doing what they were born to do, which is make music. And I guess that's what the theme of the final song is as the camera pans out. Doing what we were born to do.
And then, of course, the credits roll, and it's a pop, like, radio edit version of the big number from the movie, sung by Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, of course.
Actually, or maybe there's an epilogue where, in a way, they have still carried on their family's tradition, because they return with being internet famous, but nobody in their hillbilly community knows what the hell that means, so they're still exactly how they started. They
That's are
still
occupation.
Hillbillies. A vague occupation,
but they
which
still.
Is,
but
is what being a famous YouTuber definitely is.
So but now the reprise of Hillbillies of Vague Occupation is now it takes on this extra character now of being like a nod and a wink. But we know that they're secretly famous in the wider world.
Well, not only are they famous, but their vague occupation is regularly, even in Hillbilly Town, regularly producing these videos, and no one in the town knows.
Hmm.
Doing what we were born to do, sitting in a giant ooh, as they sort of.
That's good.
Wow. So, yeah, that was internet famous.
it was good. I would watch that. I'd watch that.
Thanks, Ali Monty, for that one. And thank you, Brent and Dave, for coming on the show.
All right.
Absolute pleasure.
Do you want to... let's go in alphabetical order. Brent, you want to say your internet things and such?
Sure. I am the game designer of a really fun party game that Matt and Tom both have played, and I imagine continue to play. I don't know.
Oh, bye.
And so is Dave.
We play it every week. Every week on a Thursday, we play it.
It's called Use Your Words. It's a party game for 3 to 6 players. It's very fun. And I am happy to announce, this may be an exclusive fact, but number one, we are soon to be on the Nintendo Switch. That is not exclusive. But we are very soon to drop an update that will make the entire game faster. We're adding 50 new prompts of content. And so it's a really great time if you haven't gotten into the game to get into it. And if you have, but you played it once and set it down, you know, maybe in the next week or two, host a little game night, check out the changes we've made. It's a lot more fun. It's a lot more streamlined. You can find out more about that at useyourwords.lol.
Excellent. That was a really seamless and succinct plug. Well done.
Thanks. I've been doing it a lot lately, so I've gotten okay at it.
Dave. Try for that one.
Oh, what? Try for another really smooth... I can't even say this sentence smoothly. No, I'm Demon Tomato Dave on things. Things include Twitter and YouTube. There you go. You'll find everything if you just go and look at those.
I mean, I'll be honest. I imagine that most of the people listening to this already know who you are and might not know who we are. So make sure that everyone, you know, comes and subscribes and all these things to the place that you're listening to this too.
Okay, in that case, let's plug the podcast Life's a Pitch, which is a podcast where you, these two guys who you might not know, host the podcast, and you should go and try that.
Yeah, do that. Yeah, please. Thanks. So that was that. Tom, have you got anything else you want to say before we finish? Any other business?
Just go to facebook.com/Life's a Pitch podcast and Twitter @Life's a Pitch show. And to see us playing Brent's amazing game, I cannot use my words to describe how love Use Your Words. We stream every Thursday. Updates are on the social media as to when we do that. But every Thursday we hope to stream Use Your Words amongst other party games. But mainly we do just stream Use Your Words because it is so fun. On twitch.tv/Life's a Pitch podcast.
Okay, well, thank you all for listening. Thank you again, Dave and Brent. And until you become internet famous by accidentally angering your parents... I've been Matt Turner.
I'm Tom McGrath.
We're some other guys too.
Hi, we're also here.
And until next time, remember who pitched it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.